We do the Senate Health and Human Services Committee meeting for Monday, March 21st. And we've got three bills on our agenda today, two of them dealing, I think, with a similar subject in a similar way. But first, we're going to hear from Senate File 370, Senator Newman. And but before we begin, can I just maybe make a little comment about what's going on this week for members, just for your information? This is the week that we are trying to do bring our budget bill out, and I wanted to give you at least tentatively what our thoughts are on schedule so people can plan appropriately. We believe that we will have the bill ready for a committee by Wednesday, and we have arranged to have our hearing continue till about 3 o'clock on Wednesday, which will give us time to go through the bill and answer questions and whatever else we need to do on Wednesday. Starting on Thursday, we are tentatively planning to meet starting earlier in the morning at 8:30 and going till about 11. Are we going to have opportunity later in the day on Thursday? So Thursday, we try to meet 8:30 to 11 to, again, entertain amendments or ideas for amendments that people may have, as well as any other input that folks may have. Friday, we are tentatively planning to meet from 8:30 in the morning till 3 in the afternoon to continue the discussion. Depending on how far we get, if we feel we need to, we're at a point where we can pass or to have a vote on a bill by Friday, we will do that. If we can't, we will continue on Saturday morning, and we'd start again at in the morning, 8:30 till maybe midday on Saturday. Just want to hold out the possibility that we may carry over into next week on Monday. I would like to give folks an opportunity to bring amendments and talk about the bill. We did set some aggressive deadlines. I've talked with our leadership, and they're willing to give us a little bit of flexibility on that. So I'm not interested in trying to just bring a bill and have a vote. We recognize that people want to know what's in the bill, and they want to have an opportunity to talk about it. We want to try to provide for that as best we can, although we're going to have to get things into Finance Committee next week, and I'm cognizant of that as well. So that's a little bit of where we're headed for. It's not precise. I understand that, but that's what I'm thinking we'll do right now. Senator Higgins, do you have a question?
Mr. Chair, and what days do you think we will be having public testimony?
I think Wednesday I'd like to, as I said, go through the bill. Mm-hmm. If we can get through that and there's time to start taking amendments, I'm happy to start taking amendments from members of the committee starting on Wednesday and Thursday. And depending on how long that process goes on, when we're finished with amendments, then I want to devote time to have public testimony. So I'm anticipating that we could start having public testimony on Thursday, or Friday, rather, certainly carry into Saturday. And again, depending on what the needs are, we may carry that into Monday as well. Okay. So I apologize for not being more precise than that, but we don't have the bill yet, and we're trying to see if we can get it written here and in the committee by Wednesday. So sorry to interrupt your opportunity to testify, Senator Newman, but I wanted to give the committee at least an idea of where we're at. So, Senator Newman, I'll turn it over to you, and please proceed.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Senator Higgins, can you hear me at this point?
Tip it up. There you go. Now I will.
How's that?
Very good. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Senate File 370 is a bill that I had drafted upon reading a report from the Office of Legislative Auditor, and it created some controversy, and consequently I did have an amendment that I would like to offer at this time. And I note in reading the amendment, there is a small typographical error, so I'm going to have to do an oral amendment to the amendment. The amendment that I wish to offer is the A1 amendment.
Members, you should have an A1 amendment in your packet, and we'll take this as an author's amendment, but we'll incorporate, Senator Newman, your typographical change. Please tell us what you need to do on the
A1
amendment.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. If you would go to page 1.22, or line 1.22, Minnesota Statute 15.509 is cited, and that's an error. It should be Minnesota Statute 15.059. 15.059.
So, members, on line 1.22, the oral amendment is to change that number to be 15.059.
That is correct, Mr. Chairman.
Right. Senator Newman offers the A1 amendment as amended. All in favor say aye.
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 Opposed? You have your bill in front of you, Senator Newman.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Upon reading the Office of Legislative Auditor's reports, I was struck by the fact that this is something that I felt that we as a committee could do in order to improve non-emergency medical transportation. And I asked that the bill be jacketed in accordance with the report. If you look in your packet, you've got the full report, but in the front of your packet, there is some blue-colored, I believe they're blue-colored pages, which contains a summary that might be helpful to you in working on this bill. And I asked Mr. Nobles and Joe Voss of the OLA to come in and explain the bill, but I will tell you that the controversy was, I hope, resolved with the A1 amendment by bringing into play at least the known players that are going to be involved in this bill as it goes forward. But in a nutshell, at this point, I think what I'll do is I'll turn this over to Mr. Nobles and Ms. Voss for a more detailed explanation of the bill. Mr. Nobles.
And Mr. Nobles, excuse me, before you begin, just members, there is a fiscal note that you have. My understanding is that the fiscal note was written for the bill as introduced. I'm going to assume, and I think our fiscal analyst is giving me an affirmative to that, that there is no change in the fiscal note as a result of the amendment we just adopted. So the fiscal note should still be relevant to the bill as amendment. So,
yeah, and if I may, Mr. Chairman, the fiscal note was just dropped off a few minutes before the hearing started. I don't believe there is going to be any change in the fiscal note as a result of the amendment, but ultimately it is going to be my request that this matter be laid over so we can address it if that were to change. Right. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Mr. Nobles.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman and members of the committee. For the record, my name is Jim Nobles. I'm the legislative auditor, and with me at the table is Joe Voss, who was the manager of our evaluation. And first and foremost, Mr. Chairman, I want to thank Senator Newman for picking up on this issue. I think, as many of you know, there have been a number of issues and controversies surrounding medical non-emergency transportation for a number of years, and it's been difficult to address some of those. And I think that is, in fact, what led to legislators asking the Office of the Legislative Auditor to conduct an independent evaluation of the program. We did that. We found some significant problems, which I think are encapsulated in our statement that we found the program and its administrative structure to be particularly confusing and to involve a good deal of overlap. And so I think that this report and its recommendations fit well within the theme of this legislative session, which is looking for ways that we can reform and redesign programs, and clearly this is a program that needs that. But even with this evaluation and the effort that Senator Newman has picked up on, it isn't going to be easy, because clearly there are a lot of people, organization, and interests that are affected by this program. And so there will be some efforts to protect the status quo. But again, we think reform is needed. With that, Mr. Chair, I would like to call on Joe Voss to give you a few more details about what we found and what we recommend. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Mr. Nobles. Ms. Voss.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. For the record, my name is...
Please pull the microphone up close so we can get your comments on the record.
Okay. Is that okay? Is that better?
Much better. Thank you.
For the record, my name is Joe Voss, and I'm with the Legislative Auditor's Office. And I'd like to just sort of run through some of the main points from our evaluation. Let me start by giving you just a tiny bit of background information on the program itself. The federal government requires states that participate in Medicaid to help public assistance recipients get to and from medical appointments. Like every other state in the nation, Minnesota does this. The program is under the purview of the Department of Human Services. In fiscal year 2010, about 253,000 public assistance recipients were eligible for transportation assistance. And the vast majority of these recipients were enrolled in the state's medical assistance program and in the program that is covered by the state's fee-for-service system. Our evaluation did not look at transportation programs under the state's managed care programs. In 2010, the medical non-emergency transportation program cost about $38 million. In the late 1970s, the legislature created two major categories of transportation. They're called access and special. Access transportation is administered by counties, and all MA recipients are eligible to receive access transportation. The program pays mileage costs when recipients drive themselves to and from the doctor or when family, friends, volunteers take them. The program also pays bus fare and in the city's light rail transit. It also pays MA recipients to take what we call taxi-style vehicles that provide recipients with either curb-to-curb or door-to-door assistance. In contrast, special transportation is administered through the Department of Human Services, and only those MA recipients who are physically or mentally unable to take access transportation are eligible for special transportation. The Department of Human Services uses an outside contractor, commonly referred to as a broker, to determine eligibility for special transportation. Transportation providers must be certified by the Department of Transportation, and special transportation must provide what's known as door-through-door services, which means that drivers have to help recipients from inside their buildings all the way up to the appointment desk of the medical provider. So the drivers go actually through the doors. Okay, now our major findings. Our first finding, which Jim touched upon, is that we think the way Minnesota has divided the program into these two components, access and special, we find it confusing and duplicative. First, healthcare needs of public assistance recipients are not static. There are some recipients who sort of flip-flop back and forth between access and special transportation, sometimes in the same day. For example, recipients may be able to take the bus to a medical appointment, but if they're perhaps being sedated during the appointment or are feeling weak from perhaps they've had chemotherapy sessions or something, they may not be able to use access on the way home, and they need special transportation. Well, the trip to the doctor is set up by the county, but the recipient themselves have to set up the trip home from the doctor if they want to use special transportation. And to do so, they have to contact the Department of Human Services broker to make sure they're eligible for those services. Furthermore, we found that many of the taxi-style providers offer both access and special transportation. The only real difference is the amount of assistance a driver actually provides. When drivers pick up somebody or they drop somebody off at the curb or at their front door, well, that's access transportation. But if that driver takes them through the door or goes into the building to actually pick them up, That's special transportation, and they need a special, and their vehicles have to be certified by the Department of Transportation in order to do that. We also know that some people sort of fall between the cracks because the two systems, access and special, are not well coordinated everywhere. For example, outstate counties often have problems finding appropriate access transportation for people who have to travel while seated in a wheelchair. When these recipients call the department's broker to find out if they can actually are eligible for special transportation because there's nothing in their community for them to take to get them to the doctor, well, the broker and DHS tells them they're not eligible. And when these people have filed grievances with the department's administrative law judges, the judges sometimes side on the side of the recipient and sometimes on the side of the department. And so we think there needs to be some clarification in this regard. So our recommendation is that the legislature require the department to develop a proposal that would create a single administrative structure for the non-emergency transportation program. And they should do that working, making sure they get input and comment from a number of interest groups. And we would like to see that proposal be presented to the legislature in the next session. Our second major finding has to do with how the department has administered the special transportation program. We call their administration sort of ad hoc. We found that the department doesn't use rulemaking procedures, and they've developed very few written policies about special transportation. Even though the department has used a broker to determine eligibility since 2004, the department has given the broker very little written guidance in terms of how it should do its job. For the most part, communications have been oral or through email. We've also found that the department has made overarching eligibility decisions without getting any public notice or public comment. And when the department has changed its practices, it has not always contacted affected parties to let them know that their procedures have changed. We also found that through its broker, the department has limited eligibility for special transportation to very short periods of time, sometimes just a day, which is inconsistent with contract language. Our recommendation in this regard is more openness from the Department of Human Services. We think it should publish its special transportation policies, seek comments from interested parties whenever it's making changes to the program. Third, we found that the department's oversight of the non-emergency medical transportation program is weak. The department collects very little data on a statewide basis. It knows very little about the number of rides that are given in outstate counties, the types of trips that are given. This makes it very difficult for the department to actually hold programs accountable. And even though the department has used a broker to coordinate access transportation in the metropolitan area from June of 2004 through June of 2009, we found that the department had no formal quality assurance program related to the broker. Monitoring, again, consisted largely of verbal communications and frequent meetings. We found a number of instances where we thought poor oversight on the part of the department led the state to paying more than what perhaps it should have been paying for the broker's services. We noted that when the Twin Cities area metropolitan counties took over the contract with the broker to deliver access transportation in the 11-county metropolitan area, the counties ended up paying the broker about $2 million less than the department paid the broker in the previous year. In this regard, we recommend that the department collects better data. The department should develop performance measures, make sure that the information that counties and the broker is sending it are correct. Finally, our fourth recommendation, our fourth finding, concerns the cost of brokering. While we found that brokering has indeed saved money in certain areas, data limitations prevented us from being able to say anything about whether or not total costs of having a broker were less than total savings. There were a few areas, though, where we pointed out that brokering has indeed worked. Since the department started using a broker to determine special transportation eligibility on a statewide basis, spending for special transportation, which provides the most costly forms of transportation, has dropped, while spending for access transportation, which is generally less costly, has increased. And we found that this shift in in expenditures has resulted in about a savings of $400,000 a year. Another area where we found that brokering has saved some money concerns the number of miles that special transportation providers are reimbursed for trips. The state used a broker to actually schedule special transportation rides for a short period of time between October 2006 and January 2008. And during that time period, we noted that the number of miles reimbursed per trip was dropped. It was less than what it was previously. And when the state decided that the broker should not broker special transportation, number of reimbursable miles increased. We estimated that during the short time frame that the state was brokering special transportation, that we saved about $400,000 to $600,000 a year. And that is our evaluation, sort of in a nutshell. I'd be happy to take questions.
Ms. Voss, are you familiar with the bill that Senator Newman has drafted?
Mr. Chair, yes, we did look at it, and it contains basically our recommendations.
Well, Ms. Voss, that was my question. Is it your understanding that this bill would address the recommendations that the legislative auditors...
Mr. Chair, yes, it would.
All right, thank you. Senator Berglund. Well,
Mr. Chairman, my reading of the bill didn't include the item where the department should address the length of time recipients are eligible for special transportation. And that's what my bill does, which I believe complements Senator Newman's bill.
Okay.
Which is one of their recommendations.
Yes.
Ms. Voss? Mr. Chair, Senator Berglund, yes, your bill is a reflection of what we said in the report also about the ambiguity between the length of the certification period and the number of times somebody has to be certified.
Senator Marty.
Mr. Chair, Ms. Voss, I'm vaguely recalling, and I'm not sure of the specifics, but I thought about three or so years ago the legislature, I thought on a bipartisan basis, had asked the state to drop broker, and matter of fact, that DHS had actually provided the language for in order to accomplish that. And then the bill passed, and DHS then said, well, the bill, the language in there, we looked at it again, and the language doesn't force us to drop the broker, and they continued with that. You're saying it saves money in some areas, and but whether their overall savings is unclear, and it seems some of the areas where they've saved money are things that could be done otherwise. I wondered if any consideration was given to going further and doing what I thought the legislature actually mandated the department to do.
Ms. Voss.
Mr. Chair, Senator Marty. Actually, on page 42 in our report, we've got sort of a little table that sort of talks about the history of the non-emergency transportation program. And the way the program has been administered over time has there's been many changes, and it's flip-flop back and forth. We thought that there were areas where savings could be accrued to having a broker. However, we felt that the department should, first of all, come up with a structure first to see who's responsible, who should be responsible for what portions of it. And what works in the Twin Cities area may not work as well outstate. So we do not go so far as to say, you know, use a broker or don't use a broker.
Senator Sharon.
Thank you. I also know that DHS was prohibited from using the brokering access transportation in 2009 of July. And it indicates here some counties, Anoka, I think Washington County, contracted with MNET in order to provide this at a substantially lower rate, which I think is critically important information, that it not just be listed here that it was eliminated, but when those counties at their choice wanted to use that system, that was up to them, it's based on their own resources, but they contracted for the service at a lower rate. And my question really is, when you're talking about the decrease in STS services and then the increase in ATS services, and you're talking about that, it's sort of framing that up as a positive, perhaps, because it's a lower cost service. But how do you align that with an earlier reality, which is ATS services are very limited in the rural part of the state, that the unique character of unloaded miles is substantially different in the rural part of the state, and that the provider of ATS services isn't there, and access then to ATS isn't existing. So here you have an increase in ATS services, but you also have a limitation of STS services and an increased access transportation to the rural area where you can't get the service. So how did you align or speak to that issue in your study?
Ms. Voss.
Mr. Chair, Senator Sharon, it's difficult to come up with cut and dry answers in that regard, because the kinds of information the department collects on access transportation, the amount of information is considerably less than the amount of information that it collects on special transportation. And we know very little about how access transportation is given in outstate Minnesota in terms of how people actually get their rides. All we know is how much money is spent. So we basically looked at, and I think on page we did explain our methodology. Basically, we looked at 2007 in the metropolitan area, looked at how the trips shifted. In the metropolitan area, we have a lot more information. And we assume that the same sort of shift occurred outstate, but we can't be sure that it did occur, because outstate, there are fewer access transportation providers willing to provide special transportation services. So we assume that it was the same shift and reduction. We don't know for sure if it was.
Senator Sharon?
I just think that that's a very big assumption, a very big assumption to be drawing. And I think I'm hoping that as a result of the work that we do in a work group that we dig into that a little bit further. My last question would be this increase in mileage issue about special transportation trips. Do we use a common standard global positioning methodology or a MAPCUS kind of methodology? And if that's the case, then wouldn't that provide for controls over expansion in the number of miles that are claimed for special transportation services?
Mr. Chair, Senator Sharon, at the current time, special transportation providers use whatever system they have in order to determine how many miles they travel. They may use one system. Company A may use one system. Company B may use another. During the short period of time that the state brokered special transportation, there was one system used. The broker actually assigned the number of miles to each trip. So they were all using the same system, and the broker was assigning the number of miles. Now, when the broker stopped brokering, there is no routine oversight over regarding how many miles trips should be.
Thank you. I'll just follow up. And I just would want to point out that having the broker isn't necessary to do that. You can still have control over the miles without introducing a brokering system. So it's not an, I don't want the assumption to be drawn that the savings that would come from the broker would necessarily not come if we develop some other system for managing STS services.
Mr. Mr. Chair,
Ms.
Senator Sharon, you're correct. The state could implement many of the controls and the processes that a broker uses themselves. It's not so much that we have a broker per se, but along with the broker comes a number of procedures and safeguards and processes that may or may not be present without them.
Senator Hand, just Senator one thought. Sure. I'm only raising that because I'm hoping that as a result of, you know, really boring down and studying this issue in the work study group that gets put together, that we're not predetermining the outcome of that study and what the conclusion should be, mm-hmm. but that we should be open to really designing the system in a way that achieves its goals in a cost-effective way.
Mr. Chair, Senator Sherrod, it's just that when we were doing our work, when the broker was brokering it, there was a system, and prior to and after, there isn't a system. That doesn't preclude the possibility of having a system.
Mr. Chairman, if I could just add to that, I mean, there are many moving parts here, as we know, in trying to do this kind of evaluation and in attribute certain results to certain parties, be it the broker, the department, the vendors, or whatever, is difficult. And so I think additional work, and we will certainly be available to present to you in much more detail this report. But I would also just add here that I know that there's a lot of concern and criticism in the past and maybe going forward about using a broker in general. But I think what this report highlights, and it needs to be taken into consideration if there is thought to dropping the use of a broker, that the department really hasn't doesn't have a shining record here, either in fulfilling its role or in oversight of the broker. So I think as you go forward with this task force and making reforms and improvements, we really need to see stronger leadership from the department, whether you have a broker or not.
Yes, thank you. Thank you for your indulgence. I really appreciate Senator Newman's introduction of this bill, and I'm very concerned about what you're saying and have been. Many of us have on this committee for a long time. And so I'm hoping, in light of what you've just said, that the new commissioner of Department of Human Services hears that the current administration that was evaluated under this proposal is not necessarily the best one to be carrying out the actions that Senator Newman is proposing in his bill. We may need some fresh looks and fresh face.
Senator Marty.
Mr. Chairman and Senator Newman, on that same point, I see your amendment that says who's on the task force, and I see that the broker is on that task force, and I hope that that does not preclude their looking whether that broker is a wise system to continue. I think I recognize what Mr. Noble said about how the department has not done a good job either in overseeing the broker or in running the stuff itself. But I hope that the fact that the broker is on it does not mean that the decision is to continue with the broker. And I'm not even sure if they should be on the task force themselves since they are the vendor. But
Senator Newman, and go ahead, Senator Newman.
To that point, to that point, Mr. Chairman, Senator Marty, I will tell you that it is specifically not my intention to give the broker any type of exclusivity. As a matter of fact, the amendment was hashed out in large measure between the broker and other parties that, you know, the vendors, the transportation providers, you will note that the amendment talks about including but not limited to. That's my language. And it is in there because I want as many participants in this process to be involved as possible.
Senator Higgins.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. My question is on the eligibility section. And I can remember from many conversations in the past that although when people are receiving their medical treatment, you know, we hope they get better and they get to a point where they don't need the special transportation. There are some folks, because of the disabilities or the diseases that they have, who will always, going forward, need the special transportation services, but yet they were subjected to eligibility determinations over and over and over again. And that, of course, you know, comes with a cost. Every time that determination is made, somebody gets paid more. And I'm wondering if in your report, if you feel that somebody's gotten a handle on this, or whether there are certain people who now are just have received like a permanent determination of eligibility, or kind of what's going on with that. And then secondarily, could you tell us how much each one of those eligibility determinations costs? And I assume it's the broker that makes that determination and gets the payment.
Ms. Voss.
Mr. Chair, Senator Higgins.
And you're going to have to pull it right up tight.
Mr. Chair, Senator Higgins.
Thank you.
Each eligibility determination costs $35. However, I should say that the broker doesn't always bill the Department of Human Services for every single eligibility determination that it makes. There are some there's no rhyme or reason, really, which explains a policy that explains when you bill and when you don't bill. But the billing cost is $35. Get the first part of your question.
Well, the more frequent.
We did find that that people, there are a small number of people that are frequently assessed over and over again. And it's largely due to the fact that many people are only certified for one day, which seems counter to what statutory language says, which says that people should not be reassessed more often than once a year. In the contract itself, the Department of Human Services has directed the broker to sort of follow the federal Social Security disability guidelines, which more or less says that if your condition is going to looks changeable, you should certify people for 6 months. And if your condition looks like it's not ever going to get any better, your certification should last all the way up to a year. Well, we found that the department does not follow that guideline at all. The department has directed the broker to certify people for a day. Not everybody who's certified for a day comes back the next day for another determination, but a small number of people have to be certified over again within weeks of being certified in the first place. So
Mr. Chair and Ms. Voss, so if somebody has been injured and needs the special transportation and is certified for one day, but he's supposed to go back to his physician every 10 days to 2 weeks for 6 weeks or whatever, there could be six or more determinations at $35 a piece, which doesn't sound like much until you multiply it times the universe. And I mean, that seems like a really logical place to start reining in some of this.
Mr. Chairman, for those of you who may be interested in more details on this issue that we're discussing with Senator Higgins, starts on page 24 about this issue of whether or not the law has been properly applied. And it was our conclusion, as you see there, that it was not.
Senator Marty?
Mr. Chairman, on this point, I think we should be angry about this. I think 3 years ago or so, it was unanimous vote on the committee to get rid of the broker and get rid of some of this stuff. And in effect, the department, and I'm not sure whether it would be more angry at the department or the broker, but that they're, in effect, they may not charge every time $35, but in effect, if somebody is qualified for it and they're supposed to be under the law for a year, they go back six or seven times, they can charge $35 extra each time to do it, which that sort of thing happens. I mean, do they give a logical reason why they're only certified for one day?
Ms. Voss.
Mr. Chair, Senator Marty, The law speaks to the length of time an eligibility determination should last, unless it's, the law says a year unless circumstances change. Well, the broker and the department, this is really the department telling the broker how to do it, that what's, I'm not sure if I can explain this correctly. The department's sense is that what's changed is that your eligibility determination has expired. And so then, because they make a determination initially based on how long do they think you're going to need the service, and they put down a certain length of time, and then when that length of time elapses, you have to call again.
Mr. Chair, Ms. Voss.
It's a confusing point.
Did it make any sense to you when you were reviewing it, or did it seem to be just somebody didn't know what they were doing?
It seems that we're talking about two different things. We're talking about length of time and that you're certified, and statutes which say the number of times you can be certified in a year. And the two aren't meeting. And we're recommending that the department come up with a workable policy, bring it to you, that actually gets the two meeting that talk about the same thing, length of time or number of times you're certified.
But, Mr. Chairman.
Senator Marty, go ahead.
Ms. Voss, are there cases where, as Senator Higgins' example was, where somebody's going back 2-3 weeks apart, you know it's going to happen, and they're having to get recertified each time?
Ms. Voss.
Mr. Chair, Senator Marty, yes, there are. We have a table on page 31 of the report that shows that there are probably about 12% of the population goes back within 6 months of their initial certification to get recertified because they need another certification.
Senator Sharon.
Thank you. I think that I'm hoping that we move through this and on to Senator Bergen's bill, because it addresses, at least for the short term until we look at it more deeply, the issue of the frequency of the assessment process. And I just want to point out that by the time you do the assessment, have that charge, and then the cost of the ride, we're spending a lot of money that probably could, even if you have a little, take a little risk that there might be a little excessive use of STS, the diminished frequency of that $35 would certainly be offsetting any potential costs that might be occurring as a result of people staying as allowable on STS for longer periods of time without such a frequent reassessment process that costs us so much money.
Senator Berglund.
Mr. Chairman and Senator Sharon, Senator Newman has now incorporated the language of my bill into his bill, so it will be, which was my intent anyway, was to amend my language into his bill, so we won't need to hear my bill now.
Thank you.
I'll have to look for that language. I have not seen that language here yet. Thank you. Thank you, Senator Berglund. Where is this?
Other Senator Higgins.
Mr. Chair, just one last question. Are we using the same broker? Have we been using the same broker all along?
Ms. Voss.
Based out of Missouri or someplace?
Chair, Senator Higgins, yes, we have. This medical transportation management is based out of St. Louis. Yes. Thank
all right.
you.
All right. Other questions for the witnesses? Or for
Mr.
Senator,
Chair?
Senator Higgins.
Oh, we have a lot of people here at the committee. I don't know if any of the public wanted to testify on the bill.
We will take a moment to do that if there are. Thank you, Mr. Nobles, Ms. Foss, for being here today and your help
you,
on this.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman and members. And again, thank you to Senator Newman for picking up on this issue.
All right. Thank you. And if there are people in the room here that would wish to make a comment on the bill, I'm willing to. I don't have anybody on my list, but if there are any, is there anybody?
There's a number, Mr. Chairman, of folks here on the next bill.
All right.
Senator Hahn.
Senator Sharon.
Just one closing comment to Senator Newman. Again, thank you very much. I just want you to know that I've had some conversations, I know you have too, with various stakeholders in this, and In one conversation with one of the participants in the at DHS in terms of trying to resolve issues between the broker and the department and the providers of services, that, and I asked, after this report came out, a synthesized statement of that DHS staffer's understanding of what the problem here was. The answer was, the problem is that the providers of the services disagree with the decisions that are made at DHS. That was the synthesis understanding of what was what the problem was for which this report came out. In my mind, it really was a concern to me that that when we have a bill that asks that department to develop a process for solving this, that we want to be sure that we continue to have an oversight as to who the department is putting in the position of doing this work. So thank you, Senator Hahn.
Yes, Senator Newman.
And Mr. Chairman, thank you. And Senator Sharon, it is my intent that I think that we are going to be continuing this conversation sometime next year, because they're coming back here with their report, and they're going to report back to us, and then we'll take a look at it.
Senator Berglund.
Mr. Chairman, I'm wondering if there's someone here from the department that could answer a question about the overpayment that's been made in this program.
Is there anyone from the department? Thank you for coming.
Mr. Chair, members, Shannon Kojisoy, the Department of Human Services, and Senator
yes,
Bergen,
Mr. Chairman,
question?
My question is, the auditor's report has found that the department overpaid its broker about $1.5 million when the department gave the broker an inappropriate cost of living adjustment. I am wondering if the department has taken any action to recoup that overpayment.
Mr. Please. Chair, members, I know that we have looked into that, and I don't have the right people here at this time to respond to that question, but I can make sure we send a response to the committee, and if you'd like, we can revisit it at another date.
That would be helpful. I'm sure we'll have opportunity in the next week or so to hear from the department. If at some point they could respond to that question, that would be wonderful.
Sure.
Senator Higgins.
Mr. Chair, is the amount of money that we put toward this transportation an open and standing appropriation, or is probably Senator Berglund knows probably better than anybody else?
Senator Higgins, I don't know, and I see our analyst is off doing something. And Senator Berglund, do you?
It is in one of the Medicaid numbers that's in the budget that we appropriate, but it's not a separate number.
Mr. Chair, Senator Berglund, is it just is it an amount of money that at some point we would run out, or do we just keep paying the bills when they come in?
It is.
Senator Berglund.
Mr. Chairman, Senator Higgins, it is part of the Department of Human Services forecast.
Okay.
Because the Medicaid program is required to be forecasted.
Okay.
And I imagine they base part of their forecast for this service on what they have contracted for in the past with the broker. No?
Other questions for Senator Newman? Members, my hope here is to lay this over for possible inclusion in our bill. Questions going forward as we do that, we can take them up then. But does that conform with your expectations?
That is correct, Mr. Chairman.
All right. Thank you. At this point, if you want to stay where you're at, Senator Newman will take up your bill, Senate File 87, if you're ready for that.
I am, Mr. Chairman. Thank you. And Chairman, members.
Senator Newman.
This is in regard to Senate File 87 and involves a rate increase for a nursing home, a specific nursing home in Watkins, Minnesota. The odd thing about this situation is by reason of its geographical location, Hilltop Nursing Home is less than a quarter of a mile away from the line that changes the amount of rate reimbursement. And I have been requested to bring this bill forward for the purpose of correcting what I see as really a basic inequity. I have three testifiers here today. Bev Mueller, who is the nursing home administrator, Annette Schroeder, who is the director of nursing, and Kathleen Chimperlin, who is on the Watkins City Council. Before we get started, however, I do want to bring to your attention that this is a very important bill for this very small community in my district. And in support of this bill, there's a number of folks who have gotten on a bus and they came down here to participate. I am not going to have them testify, but I would like, if they would, maybe raise your hand, give the committee an idea how many of you folks are here. And we'll see that the room there's quite a few here. So that's just indicative, Mr. Chairman and members, as to how important this bill really is. And I know,
Senator Newman, how long a drive is that from where people are coming from?
I'm being told that about an hour and a half drive to come down here for it.
And thank you all for making the trip, and we appreciate your being here this afternoon. So thanks for coming, Senator Newman.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And the handout that I gave you is it's three short letters that I'm providing to you as an example of some of the support coming out of the community. I will tell you I've got a number of letters in my file. I have not submitted all of them. I just wanted to give you a sampling. And with that, I would ask that Ms. Mueller begin with explaining to the committee the purpose and what this bill is all about. Ms. Mueller.
Ms. Mueller, please.
Mr. Chairman and members of the committee, I want to thank you for allowing us to come today, and a special thank you to Senator Newman and Senator Fischbach for supporting this bill. This past year, our board looked at strategically looking at our facility and looked at our bottom line for Hilltop Care Center. And we have the luxury, or not so much of a luxury, of being in two counties. We own two nursing homes. Hilltop Care Center is in Meeker County, and we have Cronus Manor in Stearns County, which is part of the MSA. And when looking at that, there is a room disparity of $18.92, to be exact, to $35 per day difference. Yet we provide no different care to our residents. Our residents are no less acute in one home compared to the other. Our food cost is no different. Our incontinent product is no different. Electrical, none of that is a 15% reduction in pay. So what we are requesting is that you take a look at this disparity, and it gives us a bottom line of a negative approximately $300,000 per year. And as an organization or a healthcare system, that bottom line has become a very much of a deficit for our board and has made our board take a look at the viability of Hilltop Care Center. And as you can see from the people here, from their support, you know that that is very much of a support need for their community. Their residents and the area residents support us greatly. Our occupancy last year was 95%, and if you look at many of the area nursing homes, that is very good. And people request to come to our facility. They don't just come from Meeker County. Many of them are from Stearns County, Wright County. So that means that they're looking, and today with the Internet, people are able to look at what is a great nursing home. And we are very proud of the care that our staff provide to us at Hilltop Care Center. But with such a disparity, it is very difficult. And over the years, we have cut as much as we can to try to make a bottom line. We've added services. We provide meals to the behavioral health units in Annandale, just as another means of adding additional cash to our facility in order to try to make a bottom line. So with that being said, you know, we would greatly appreciate your support in decreasing the disparity between and the fairness of what that would bring, because our residents deserve qualified staff, and the staff deserve to be paid when we are less than a quarter mile, or if you looked, it's about 15 miles to the next nursing home. If we closed our nursing home today, our residents would not most likely go to another nursing home in Meeker County. They would most likely go to either Wright County or Stearns County, and you would be paying that difference in that. And from looking behind me, you will see that it is definitely an integral part of the community and the area. It's not just the city of Watkins, it's also the area that it supports. I thank you for your support and appreciate your interest in moving this forward. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Mueller. Senator Newman, who would you like to have next testify?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Next, I'm going to have the Director of Nursing testify, Annette Schrader.
Ms. Schrader, please pull the mic close so we can catch your remarks on the tape.
Mr. Chairman and members of the committee, I want to thank you for...
Could you please identify yourself for the record?
Yes, I will.
Thank you.
I am Annette Schrader, and I've been the Director of Nurses at Hilltop Care Center for 12 years. And I also want to thank Senator Newman and Senator Fischbach for supporting this bill. We're less than a quarter of a mile away from the Stearns County line, and we're owned by Painesville Area Healthcare System. And as Bev said, the disparity is $18 to $35 per day per bed difference. And the next facility that's closest to us is less than 10 to 15 miles away. We have the same cost as the other homes. We keep our staffing and supplies at a minimum. We're constantly looking at that. And yet it's causing a strain on our nursing home, and the emotions are running high. If our residents do have to move to a different county, as Bev stated, they would be forced to leave their loved ones in Watkins, and they would have to drive farther to see their loved ones. We have difficulty attracting staff and keeping staff because we don't know our future. The loss would be devastating to our small community. It would be a huge loss for the elderly and others in need if they would have to leave. We're sort of the hub of Watkins. We have people coming in volunteering. They come in for mass on Tuesday. They come in to have coffee and cookies in the afternoon. So they're coming in. We have the intergenerational children coming in. We've been a 5-star facility since the inception of the 5-star rating. We were number 34 out of 386 nursing homes in the quality of life survey done this year. Yet, despite all the good cares, the strong reputation, and the efficient caring staff, and being ranked one of the top nursing homes in Minnesota, we can't make a go of it financially, in a large part because of the rate disparity. I appreciate any help you can do to help us with this bill.
Thank you, Ms. Schroeder. And Senator Newman, or some of your witnesses, just for those of us who are less familiar with the structure, you've referred to being a quarter mile away from the Stearns County line. And could you explain generally, briefly, what is the issue that is causing the disparity? What is the thing that we're running up against?
I can answer that, Mr. Chairman.
Senator Newman.
There's the different groups. Stearns County, they're a quarter or less than a quarter of a mile away from the Stearns County line. Stearns County is in a different statutory group, Group 1. Hilltop is in Meeker County. That's Group 2, and that's the reason for the disparity, just the geographical distance which by statute has established these lines. I believe that is correct.
So, Senator Newman, just so that I understand, we have in statute rate structures that are based on some groupings, and the groupings are by county. And so what you're saying is you're very close to the Stearns County line, and the Stearns County grouping is rated at a higher reimbursement rate than the Meeker County. And so even though you're close, you're not quite there. So the line was drawn. If it would have been drawn 15 miles the other way, you'd be fine, but where it is. Is that basically
that is, Mr. Chairman, correct. And members, if you look on the bill, we're dealing with statute 256B.441, and the groupings are defined right on the bottom. It's line 1.23. The groupings are defined in subdivision 30 of that statute. And if you happen to go to the statute, you'd literally see the counties listed.
And Senator Newman, just on line 1.12, it says that if the distance exceeds 20 miles, no adjustment shall be made. Is that, if you're within 20 miles, does that mean that there would be an adjustment?
Yeah. Mr. Chairman, there is in this statute a method to compute the rates and to make exceptions to this group. And we are with this bill. In effect, we're going to bypass that computation, and we are simply going to say that this particular nursing home, because they're so close to Group 1, i.e. Stearns County, that we're going to simply let them charge the same rate as Group 1.
And maybe one of your witnesses knows this. What is the closest proximity in miles between your nursing home and one that is at the higher rate?
The two closest one is 15 miles away, and one is 18.
So the county line is 15 miles away, and also the next?
No. The two nursing homes. The county line is less than 0.25 miles.
I got it. I see.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
All right. That was getting clearer to me, I think. Okay. And, Sir Newman, you have one other witness?
I do. I have a member of the Watkins City Council that has asked to come in and testify. Ms. Chamberlain.
Mr. Chairman and members of committee,
could you please identify yourself for the record?
My name is Kathleen Chamberlain. I'm here to represent the Watkins City Council.
Thank you.
The Hilltop Nursing Home is an important asset to our community. Many of the relatives of our town go up there, and they've been residents there and have had great care. And our young people are volunteering there, the time up there, and they learn to integrate with the older people, and many of these young people have gone on as nurses, x-ray technicians, physical therapists, and a doctor. And the people up there just enjoy having the children there. And I tell you this to stress, and the Hilltop is more than just a nursing home. It is the hub of our community. It is the biggest employer we have, with 86 employees, and they have many intergenerational activities. It would be an enormous economical impact on our town of 800 if it were to close. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Chamberlain. Appreciate your being here. Are there questions, Senator Berglund?
Mr. Chairman, I don't have a question. I just a little bit of history here. This particular area got put into Region 1 by virtue of a House member who was retiring who represented that area. And this was done in a conference committee. And so that's probably not going to change or go back now. But and I'm not saying anything bad about your bill, Senator Newman. But we do need to be careful with these kind of bills, because what happens is you keep redrawing the line. And then, you know, the next one is a mile away from the previous one, and then the next one's 10 miles away from the last one. And pretty soon you're just redrawing that line because people want higher reimbursement. So just a word to the wise.
Senator Berglund, I appreciate that. We've run into similar kinds of issues in my experience in the Education Committee, where we have got things that apply and are geographical in nature, and then there are exceptions, and I appreciate your counsel. Senator Lurie.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Yeah, as you're talking about your nursing home, I have one in Kennebec County, and it is actually the only one in Kennebec County. It does not happen to be situated within a quarter mile of the boundary, but it is next to the higher reimbursement counties, and they, I've come down and told their story many times as well, and it's very difficult to work within a community of nursing facilities that are all really, really struggling. I mean, I'm sitting here crafting ways that I could offer an amendment to that would allow this to incorporate the Villa Health Center in Mora as well. I mean, I think that, when we draw these lines, it is a very, very political and very difficult process, and one that needs a great deal of attention. I think probably a better route to go before too long would be to grab the bull by the horns and deal with the rate equalization on a statewide basis and try to get back to some principles of fairness rather than arbitrary lines in terms of these group rates. And I guess I'm not going to, throw a monkey wrench into your bill here and offer an amendment, but I do have one drafted just for the heck of it that would, but I won't offer it, but I will offer the advice that, there are many, many nursing facilities really, really struggling, and the core of our community. I mean, Villa Health Center is a vital piece of Mora's community and our economy and the jobs that are available in that very small rural community, and the only nursing home in the entirety of that county, and at great risk of closure in today's really difficult climate. So not against your bill, but this is not as unique a situation as one might think of because of the happenstance of a quarter mile. There's other factors as well that are probably as compelling.
Thank you, Senator Lurie. I appreciate your comment, and I agree with you that this is an issue that I think I personally would like to see the committee address in a little more comprehensive way than perhaps we have time to meet our budget deadlines and issues, but perhaps we'll have time after that or even in the interim or next year. But I think the whole issue of how we deal with long-term care is something that we need to spend more time on, and it's a little frustrating for me to not be able to do that in the constraint of trying to do the budget. Senator Fischbach.
Mr. Chair, we have been trying to address this for a couple of years, specifically with this nursing home, because it has been an issue. And just so you know, I'm the Stearns County that's a quarter of a mile, so we're very, very close. And Painesville is in my district, obviously, so very familiar with it. And I know we have been trying to address it for a couple of years. And I will just say, although very nice of you to thank me, Senator Newman has been doing the heavy lifting on this year. So he's doing a great job, and appreciate all of you coming down for the hearing, because it is important, I think, for the whole committee to see how much this does mean to the community. And I just really, it really, really is important that we are able to help these folks out this year. It just means so much to the community, and this disparity, like I said, we've been trying to deal with this for several years, and it's getting to a point where we risk losing this nursing home if we don't, and it's something that's important to not only Watkins but the whole area, because it does serve a great purpose there and a great need that the community has. So I would ask the committee to support this and Senator Newman's bill and see if we can fit it into that Senate omnibus bill.
Senator Hamm.
Senator Sheeran.
I just would say that I really appreciate the efforts to represent the needs. I think this is a critically important change that needs to occur, but I want to say that the nursing homes in my district have been asking, as you all know, for a long period of time, that the entire reimbursement system, the rebasing of the reimbursing system that would help this nursing home as well as all the nursing homes throughout the state. The story isn't different in the nursing homes in my district and in the counties in my area of the state. they would like to see their rates adjusted too. And I'd have a very difficult time going back and offering an explanation as to why those costs, which are the same in my area, there's not a differential in those costs simply because of a quarter of a mile, why we aren't extending this adjustment throughout the state. So I support really stepping back and seeing if we can't accomplish this, but the piecemeal approach, it just moves it a little bit further and leaves great portions of the state out of that solution, which should be made throughout the state of Minnesota.
Yep. I'm wondering if, Senator Berglund, if in your experience, and for those of us who have not been in the Senate and may not know, but this structure, this tiering structure, do you recall what was the intent when we set that up? Was it trying to recognize some economic differentials, or just if you could help us, it might be helpful for the committee and certainly for me.
Thank you, Senator Hahn. The rates have been based on both historical costs and time motion studies. And historically, there have been differences in costs throughout the state. And that's why when legislators decide their area is going to be in a new cost area in a conference committee, I get upset. I'm still upset about it, but I know we probably aren't going to be able to do anything about it. But whenever we do things like that, we do create problems for those that are on the other side of the line. And this is an example of one of those problems.
So the structure that was originally designed was trying to reflect the historical cost differences in different parts of the state and mm-hmm. set up some reimbursement rates that seem to be reasonable based on what that experience has been.
And also time motion studies. That we could know for sure how much time it takes to take care of one individual with one set of circumstances as compared to another.
All right. Thank you. Appreciate that. Senator Newman, first, any other questions for Senator Newman or his witnesses? And I do want to take, again, the opportunity to thank all of you for making a relatively long trip to St. Paul. We can be, I guess, glad that it isn't snowing today. Tomorrow it might have been, so we're glad we could do this today. Appreciate your show of support for Senator Newman and the bill and for the nursing home in your community. I understand that your intent is to lay this over, that we might consider it for inclusion in our bill. Is that correct, Senator Newman?
That is correct, Mr. Chairman.
Okay. Are there any other questions for Senator Newman or the witnesses? Senator Lori.
I'm wondering if there's anyone from the nursing home industry that has any perspectives on this and whether they've considered whether they're supportive of this general approach or if, from Care Imperative.
If there's anybody from the association here that would like to comment
on this and just said whether they are supportive or
not seeing anybody rushing to the podium here. So
I'm Father Richard Gross. I came to Watkins.
Excuse me, could it, just one moment, please. If you'd like to comment, please come forward and identify yourself for the record. And we'll
thank you, Father Richard Gross. I grew up in Watkins, came back as pastor in 1995.
Could you restate your name, please? I didn't catch your name.
Say again?
Could you please restate your name?
Oh, Reverend Richard C. Gross.
Well, thank you. Please go ahead.
And I'm a retired priest living in Watkins, grew up there. And in my 49 years of active ministry, I've come across a number of different nursing homes. And I put this one right there at the top. And just the loving care, their concern, not only for the physical, mental, social, but religious aspects of life. And I often get called up there and spend time with patients dying. And just hear so many good things about it. It would be just a great loss to the community and the people around there. Having growing up in the community, I probably know at least 50% of the people from growing up there with them. And and it's just so many activities there that enhance that. I said, just it's top notch on the top. And I understand, you know, legally, I don't know if you can do anything about it or not, but I would beg that if there's any possibility at all, that you'd give it a try.
Thank you, Reverend Gross. Any other comments? Well, members, our intent here is to, as Senator Newman indicated, lay the bill over. We will consider it for inclusion. There is, as was noted, a cost on the fiscal note, looks like $95,000 in fiscal year 12 and $141,000 in fiscal year 13 and going forward. So there is a cost, not, I guess, huge in the scope of the entire budget that we have to deal with, but nevertheless something that we have to consider. So we will do that, and appreciate you bringing the bill forward. Thank you, Senator Newman.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Thank you, committee.
The members, with that, Senator Berglund has kindly allowed her bill to be incorporated into Senator Newman's earlier bill. We will meet tomorrow. I think we have a bill to be heard, maybe just one. I'm not sure, but I am anticipating a brief meeting tomorrow to hear, I think, one bill. So thank you, and we're adjourned.